This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. It's been several weeks now that the new case numbers of COVID-19 have been elevated in Vermont. Over the weekend, the state reported what had been, up to that point, the largest single-day new tally since spring and the first virus-related death of someone in Vermont since July. We now know that the state recorded 46 new cases of COVID-19 yesterday, making that the largest count since spring. And in fact, the state is now projecting that over the next few weeks, we will see a 7-day rolling average where the state has 40 to 60 new cases of COVID-19 each day. Of course, that is a forecast, that's a projection that could change if Vermonters are able to take extra precautions. And that's exactly what the Health Department and Governor Scott are asking Vermonters to do, especially around what may have seemed safe for the last couple of months, small social gatherings with friends or family. The state wants people now to limit gatherings to 10 people or fewer, and to think hard even about things like playdates, friendly get-togethers, outdoor barbecues, and more. The state has also announced today a suspension of the out-of-state travel map, essentially the map that allowed certain people from certain counties with low case counts under 400 per million to travel into Vermont without first quarantining for 14 days or quarantining for 7 days and then getting a negative COVID-19 test. Now, anyone coming in from out-of-state will be required to follow those quarantine rules, and that applies to Vermonters who have left Vermont and are returning. This is a bitter pill to swallow for many Vermonters as we look forward to the Thanksgiving holiday and some religious and secular gatherings that occur in the late months of the year, but one that the state says is going to be really essential for Vermonters to follow if we want to keep our case counts down. Nonetheless, you may have experienced or seen on news reports the large gatherings of people in the streets of Burlington this weekend and in Montpelier as well in the last few days after it was announced that Joe Biden is the projected winner of the presidential election. And with the nice weather we've been experiencing, people have had the opportunity to gather outside, a nice gift in November. But we may also be gathering more than we otherwise might with this nice weather. So what exactly do we need to do to stay safe over the next several weeks and months, and how can we make sure to help get our case numbers down? We're going to talk about that now in our weekly health update. We are joined by Tracy Dolan, Deputy Commissioner for the Vermont Department of Health. Deputy Commissioner Dolan, thank you for joining us again.
Hi, good afternoon, Jane.
We're also joined today by Ted Brady, Deputy Secretary for the Agents of Commerce and Community Development. He can help answer questions about what the protocol is for businesses, what's happening with Vermont ski resorts and other associated businesses who rely on, in many cases, out-of-state or even Canadian skiers and riders to come into the state. Ted Brady, thank you for joining us today as well.
Good afternoon, Jane.
Deputy Commissioner Dolan, perhaps not a surprise to everyone to see that our travel map has been suspended and now anyone coming in to the state from out of state or returning to the state from out of state will have to abide by the quarantine rules. As I could see it, there are actually only two counties out of Vermont in our travel map region that would otherwise be considered safe, Aroostook County in Maine, and I think it was Fulton County in New York State were the only two that were green on the map. And in fact, it looks like that if Vermont counties were having to abide by the same rules, only Franklin County and Rutland County in Vermont are under 400 cases per million. That's a pretty grim looking map right now.
Yes, yeah, certainly we were seeing this happen over the last few weeks. Dr. Levine was talking more and more about this idea of a sea of red. And to avoid any confusion, we thought it's best to just suspend the travel map. And by that, we mean assume that it's all red. And so any travel now, if you go outside of Vermont and come back in, or if anyone comes into Vermont, you will need to quarantine for 14 days. Up to 7 days if you need to test out.
7 days and then a test. And that test could take a couple or even several days to come back. Particularly, it's been taking longer for people who are doing asymptomatic testing. So it could be close to the 14 days anyway.
It could, yes.
You know, also the state continues to ask the health department, Governor Scott, other state officials continue to ask people to really think hard about gathering, about having anybody outside of their immediate household involved in any kind of socializing over the weekend. It's not a new rule, but the state has asked people to limit gatherings to 10 people or fewer and only one other trusted household. Why not make a rule around this, given what the state is seeing in terms of the spread associated with small gatherings?
Sure. First, I can tell you where that's coming from. We have outbreak prevention teams within the health department who look carefully at the outbreaks that we see and try to determine what some of the factors are that are driving it. And what we're seeing is some of these smaller social gatherings that feel safe, probably to the people holding them. They're thinking, you know, I don't have 100 people in my house. I have 50 and 20 people in my house. And I've been hanging out with these people off and on for the last few months. So there's this almost false sense of safety. But now that we have higher transmission, really community transmission in some areas, we're saying, you know what, that's actually where a lot of this is coming from. Halloween parties were a real culprit, not college Halloween parties, really adult Halloween parties in the communities. We learned that more and more of our cases were coming from those types of gatherings and other gatherings. And so that's where we're saying those kind of gatherings is what we're really trying to target here, which is a little different than a formal meeting that may be set up that has stricter guidelines. Again, we'd probably discourage any of that now. But the current rule stands with the broader numbers as per the governor's order. But now we're saying, we're strongly advising that for these small gatherings, 10 or fewer. And as Dr. Levine says, that doesn't mean you should try to get 10 people in your house. We're really encouraging even fewer than that, unless this is really part of your immediate family.
Well, even immediate family, right? I mean, we're thinking about immediate family in many cases around the Thanksgiving holiday, or immediate chosen family for many people. And, you know, being alone on Thanksgiving can be really lonely and isolating. And I think many of us are now looking at that possibility, or looking at the possibility of not even seeing or gathering with close family members and friends within Vermont. I mean, I'm certainly thinking about, you know, I think I probably, you know, my spouse will be working, my kids and I are probably going to have to stay home by ourselves and not see my parents on Thanksgiving because, you know, we heard in that press conference, you may think you're safe, but that doesn't mean you are. That doesn't mean you don't have or couldn't contract the virus. And I just, you know, I'm really feeling for many Vermonters who are probably anticipating a holiday season that could be a lot more lonely than they thought it would be.
You know, it's a real shift. We actually had that conversation in my family just yesterday. I'm not sure that my kids are going to see their grandparents for Thanksgiving dinner. Certainly, it's not going to be normally our family gathers with another family, and it's probably about 15 people normally. That's definitely not going to happen. And so I think a lot of families are having this discussion. A reminder, though, that we really think this is the only year we're going to see this big shift. Hopefully now as we move into the spring, you know, we will see things start to get back to normal socially, you know, assuming that we have some good dissemination of vaccine and we see cases go down. But it's true. The other thing I would want to remind people is that we did have to make some real adjustments around the way we practiced Halloween with small kids. You know, that was a real shift. Rather than go to door, a lot of people spread out. They figured out how to do it differently. It's not the same thing, but really people made a pretty big behavior adjustment there. And we're asking for a big behavior adjustment here. And it is hard. So maybe more use of Zoom, a much smaller gathering than you would have planned. Maybe somebody comes and picks up their turkey dinner from your home and it's a quick hello through the porch. It's not the same, but these are tough times, and we really want to keep our numbers as good as we can, given that we really are an island still in a pretty big sea of red.
It's also been interesting to me to see a lot of businesses stepping up to try to accommodate the need, maybe be able to make some money at a time that is very hard for hospitality businesses to make money, especially restaurants right now, saying, we can offer you a small Thanksgiving meal. You know, you can order it ahead and pick up. And, you know, I think for many restaurants and organizations that are doing this, it's based on financial need for them, for sure, but also I see a sense of community emerging in many of these offerings from various restaurants and other places that are trying to, all of us, connect with one another. So that's both, you know, disappointing to think about the changes for many families, but heartening to see. Ted Brady, you know, we haven't been seeing outbreaks associated with inns and hotels, with restaurants, with businesses where people may be coming and going. But I imagine, nonetheless, businesses are quite concerned about what an uptick in cases might mean for them. Governor Scott said today, there's no anticipation of going back into lockdown, but that is not off the table. So what are you hearing at the Agency of Commerce and Community Development in terms of how businesses and and all kinds of workplaces as well are thinking about how to navigate these higher cases?
Yeah, well, thanks. One of the sayings that I've heard some businesses talking about is that we need to stay strong in order to stay open. So stay safe, stay strong, and stay open. And that means really following the guidance, making sure people are wearing masks, staying 6 feet apart, avoiding those crowded spaces. And it also means holding your customer accountable. So when your customer comes in and signs a certification that say they travel, that they're in compliance with the travel guidance, make sure they are. Ask them some questions. Tell them what the travel guidance is. This is not a casual interaction like, hey, just sign this thing and we're all good to go. And by staying strong, by staying alert and making sure that we're all following these rules, our goal is to be able to stay open. That is the number one goal for our businesses. And obviously public health first. And if we do this right, we're going to be able to keep these businesses open. Unfortunately, the virus will determine the future, but we do have some ability to control our behavior and hopefully influence what that virus does.
Ted Brady, I'm very concerned because you've given me a new three-phrase sentence to try to remember. First, we had masks on faces, six-foot spaces, wide-open places, and it took us long enough to get that one. And now you're giving me stay safe, stay strong, and stay open.
Yeah, this isn't the official line. This is what I'm hearing businesses talk about, and I think it's a really smart way to look at it. And just if you're a business, don't worry about the catchy catchphrase. Just worry about doing the thing, which is follow the guidance, and that should keep us safe.
Well, listeners, what about you? What is the thing that you're trying to do and that you're struggling with or that you need some answers or advice on? Our number again, 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. Let's go to Clay, who's calling in from Heartland. Hi, Clay. Go right ahead. What's your question today?
Hi, how are you? Thank you for bringing me onto the program. My question is, I'm like thousands of other people on the border of New Hampshire that work in New Hampshire. How does this affect us? How do we make a living if we go across the border to our jobs and then we go home, try to go home every night? What do we have to quarantine every single time we cross the border back from New Hampshire?
Clay, there's an answer for you and we can get that for you, but what are you doing right now? You're able to travel because under the state guidelines, whether the New Hampshire county you work in is over the minimum or not in terms of caseloads, you're allowed to go back for essential travel. So presumably you're doing that now, right, Clay?
Yes, absolutely.
And I don't know, Ted Brady or Tracy Dolan, either one of you could answer this, but my understanding from today's announcement is that that kind of travel is still allowed.
Yes, it is.
So, Clay, you are still allowed to work in New Hampshire and go back and forth. Ted Brady, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, a big caveat to that, which is that's essential travel, right? Going to your job and people coming to Vermont, going to their job, that's essential travel. What we're worried about is just because you can travel there for work doesn't mean that you should stay and have dinner, doesn't mean you should stay and go skiing, go mountain biking, whatever it is. Go to your job, come back, and that's what the exemption's meant for. Yep.
Clay, does that answer your question? Are you feeling okay about that?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck. While we're talking about cross-border issues, let's go to Carl in Reigate. Hi, Carl.
Hi. Thanks for hearing from me. I'm talking about Orange County and Caledonia County. There are grocery stores on both sides of the river. There are lumber yard hardware stores on both sides of the river. And we have New Hampshire people and Vermont people going back and forth across this border. And my question is sort of a repeat to the Tracy Dolan, that I know that you've told us that you're talking, our governor and our commissioner of health are talking to the Sununu people about this all the time. But I'm really curious, what kind of pressure, what kind of way are we really trying to get the New Hampshire side to be as responsible as our side of the border?
Deputy Secretary Dolan, or Deputy Commissioner Dolan, what do you think about that?
Sure. I know they're in discussions all the time. I can only assume with their numbers going up as well. I mean, they're facing some alarming numbers right now, that they're taking this very seriously as well. I would make an adjustment. I think last time we spoke, we were still allowing shopping, some other pieces like that. Now we have really limited the cross-border activity to work and school only. Go there, come back. So we're no longer saying, hey, if you do your shopping over there, head on over and do your shopping and come back, or your haircuts. We're saying now it's really only for essential travel. But I can't speak to New Hampshire except to say that I certainly know their public health people there. I know their deputy commissioner very well, and I know they're also taking it very seriously.
But, to Carl's point, Tracy Dolan, there's a taking it very seriously, but a different approach and different guidelines and different restrictions. And when we do see so much cross-border activity, even just essential cross-border activity, there does seem to be a situation where perhaps you could see the governor's administration trying to get the New Hampshire administration to enact some stricter guidelines. It doesn't sound like that particular conversation is one that you're aware of.
Not that I'm aware of. That may be happening, but not that I'm aware of. I think we can only really control our side and our behavior, and that's kind of our focus right now.
Federalism. So, when you talk about now really trying to close down activities that are happening cross-border for somebody who lives in the Upper Valley, so don't do your shopping there if you can avoid it, if you live in Vermont and usually shop in New Hampshire. What about things like for schools on the border where there are populations of students traveling back and forth? The school is allowed, but things like sports practice, if it's a club team, is that suddenly going to be under scrutiny? I think there are a lot of questions that are, that people will say, wait a minute, my situation is X. Is that allowed?
Yeah, and we're getting into that informal territory where now we have said essential only, and so it gets really tricky to go case by case, but I might punt that over to Ted. I know that we have tried to tighten it to school and work now, and so I don't know if Ted has more information about other kinds of examples of where you should or shouldn't be going cross-border.
Deputy
Sure.
Secretary?
Sure. The current guidance explicitly says that school activities are ineligible essential travel purpose. So if your kid is participating in a school-based sport across the border with their school, that's okay. You're right. If it's a club-based sport, that's not a school-based activity. So they shouldn't be participating in those if it requires them to cross the border.
Let's go to Beth in Peacham. Hi, Beth. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
So here's my question. Let's say you have somebody a son who lives in New York, and they want to come home for Thanksgiving. Can they walk into on a Wednesday before Thanksgiving, the Wednesday before a week before Thanksgiving, can they walk into a testing place in New York, get their test, walk out of the testing thing, right into their car, drive their car directly to Vermont, go downstairs and quarantine until they hear 2 or 3 days later from that testing place in New York? And if they are negative, can then they come out of quarantine and be hanging around with everybody for Thanksgiving?
Okay, so Beth, let me just ask a couple clarifying questions because that was very involved. Probably not hypothetical question. Is the person that you're thinking of who's in New York State, will they be quarantining at their home in New York for 7 days prior to the test that they get in New York?
No. So they will walk into the testing place, and then they will get tested, and then they will get immediately in their car. They will not stay not a moment in New York City, and drive immediately here and go into quarantine until they hear from their test in New York.
Okay, I think we've got it. So, Deputy Commissioner Dolan, my reading on that would be that is not a protocol that the state of Vermont would allow. The person in New York
You
would
are
have to.
correct.
Okay, so the person in New
Yes, the
York
person,
should quarantine for
yeah,
7 days prior to getting
at
their
minimum.
test at minimum.
Yes, either they quarantine for the full 14 or they quarantine for at least 7, get a test, and we need a negative result. I can speak to Ted. I'll defer to Ted as to whether or not they can arrive and then wait for their test, but the key really is that quarantine period. And then their trip would have to be via private vehicle, with really no overnights because we assume any overnights would be in a red zone. But let me punt over to Ted to see if he has anything to add there.
Yeah, Deputy Secretary, right. It sounds like the travel piece is in line with Vermont rules. This person would be getting in their car, getting to Vermont, and quarantining at their wherever they're staying in Vermont. But the question is, you know, the testing in New York, how would that have to be done?
Right. Unfortunately, you need to quarantine either before you come here or when you get here. So you'd have to be quarantined for the full 7 days and wait for your test result before you could interact with other people and before you could go about your, before you could move about the cabin freely, as they say.
Beth, let me come back to you. Is that all clear to you? Does that make sense?
Yes. I guess my only question is, what is the 7 days quarantining before do if you're going to get tested anyway to know if you're positive or negative?
Tracy Dolan.
Sure, because if you are infected with COVID, most people are able to determine whether or not they're positive if you're exposed by 7 days. And so if you test right away, that doesn't really tell us. It's possible then that that was too early in the process. And so that's why we ask for the waiting of 7 days.
Let's get another question in here from Steve in West Lebanon, New Hampshire. Hi, Steve.
Hi. So I'm going to just turn off the radio because
it's distracting.
I'll be really
yes.
distracted listening to my own voice. So.
Believe me, I know how that feels, Steve.
Thank you. So my wife and I live in West Lebanon, New Hampshire, and our son is a current junior at Middlebury College. Their classes end on November 21st. I should say they're on campus. Classes end on November 21st, and one or both of us were going to go pick him up and bring him, you know, back home to West Leb. How are these plans affected by the new Vermont state regulations?
Yeah, good question, considering that, you know, you can't take public transportation as easily now either. If you could, you know, get your child on a bus, for example, that's trickier now. Tracy Dolan, Ted Brady, I'm not sure which of you wants to tackle that.
I'll pass that off to Ted. I think that still refers to travel regulations, and that's his ballpark. Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Tracy. So our college guidance actually explicitly carves out how a family could come and drop off or pick up a student. And as long as they have a contactless experience, so they don't stop and get gas in Vermont, they don't stop at the store, they don't stop and get something to eat, they don't even go into the person's dorm room. They're literally coming, picking up their child at the curbside. The child gets in the car and you drive home directly back to New Hampshire. That could be okay. It's not preferable. The preferable method would be find a way to get that kid into somebody else's car, driving down Interstate 89 and into West Leb. But there is a carve out. You can learn about it in the college guidance available at the Agency of Commerce's webpage.
Steve, good luck to you and good luck to your kid there. I hope it goes okay. And I understand that this is a challenging time for all college students too, really feeling a lot of sympathy and empathy for college students who are trying to deal with all these changes as they arise. Let's talk to Ray in Montgomery. Hi, Ray. You're on the air.
Hi. I had a quick question about these changes to cross-border travel. 7 Days had an article recently where they were pointing out that when the ski areas open up, 80% of their skier visits will be from out-of-state skiers. And I don't see how, you know, a skier just checking off a box that says they read the Vermont travel guide is going to be enough. My son works in a small local grocery store, and I'm really worried that opening the borders wide open to these skier visits with really no enforcement of these quarantine regulations is going to be a disaster.
Ray, before we get an answer to your question, I think there's a similar thought coming in from Stan in Cornwall. So let me pair the two of you together. Hi, Stan. Go right ahead.
Hi there. Yeah, my concern also is the cross-border travel of people who are coming from down country. We are all trying to stay safe, and those of us who are active skiers have a concern about the influx, specifically on Friday nights and holidays. I've worked at a ski area for many years, and I know that better than 80 or 90% of the skier traffic on the weekends is from Boston or New York or Pennsylvania or New Jersey. And like the other gentleman stated, I really wouldn't trust someone just checking off a box saying they were quarantined. So that's my opinion and question.
Yeah, Stan, thanks. Deputy Secretary Brady, maybe you can address this, and I'll just let everybody know as well. We're going to focus our show tomorrow on ski resorts, ski communities, skiers, and how all of this is working and what the challenges are for ski communities and ski resorts. So we'll spend a lot more time on this tomorrow as well. But Ted Brady, to the points that we heard from Ray and Stan, what do you say?
Yeah, we have the strictest ski area guidance in the country. It requires a reduction in capacity of the lifts, a reduction in capacity at the lodge, and every skier to certify that they have met our quarantine requirements. As you heard today, the governor announced an intention to start doing some compliance checks and step up our compliance checks with institutions that are required to have these types of certifications and with the businesses that are serving the public. So we expect this to be taken very seriously. The legislature gave us $4 million to help market to people to come to Vermont safely. The message will be saturated in all the markets to say, you need to come to Vermont. If you're coming to Vermont, you need to travel here safely, and here's how you do so. So we have every intention of educating people, and we have every intention of holding people to account.
When we think about cases, though, Tracy Dolan, we've been hearing and continue to hear today that, you know, cross-border travel and non-compliance with the quarantine requirements are a significant driver of transmission. And so, you know, beyond the ski resorts, I think there are a lot of Vermonters who have questions about, is there a way to better enforce compliance? You know, for example, we got a note from Jeannie who tweets, why don't we have a fee assigned for non-compliance? Education has been given for 10 months and people are still not following. And, you know, so could there be, without having a blanket ban on anybody doing cross-border travel, which seems pretty difficult and pretty onerous and maybe too challenging for people, you know, is there a way to better enforce compliance?
You know, I would probably punt that back to Ted. I know that they are talking about increasing compliance. I think we're still trying to explore that. But I would want to just point out that while some of the cross-border travel pieces are part of what's driving our rates up, a lot of the driver is actually coming from within Vermont. It's these social gatherings. It's a relaxation of some of the rules that we had been having in place. As our contact tracers are reaching out to close contacts of cases, we are learning more and more as we question people that they are actually not wearing masks as often, that they are really expanding the number of contacts and the number of social gatherings they're going to. So while there is certainly some piece of this that is connected to travel and cross-border, and that really matters, the part that is really solidly within our control right now also is a very important part, and that alone would really help our case count if we were able to pull that into line.
Understood. And yeah, definitely hearing the two-pronged approach here, and especially the ability for Vermonters to control their own gatherings. But we're hearing frequently that there are two drivers that the state is concerned about, and one is the small gatherings and another is travel into yes. and out of the state. So Ted Brady, what do you say about the possibility of fees or threats of sanctions for noncompliance?
Sure. Well, going back to the ski area guidance, a good example is in that ski area guidance, if you break the quarantine rules and you certify you've met that quarantine and say there's an outbreak or it comes tracked back to you as somebody traveling here, that ski area has the ability to take your ski pass. And so there are, in fact, consequences for breaking those rules. I think it's really important to recognize that in Vermont, we've had some incredible compliance, whether it be mandatory masks or our travel guidance. Vermont, when you compare the number of cars on Interstate 89 to last year at the same time, we're down. Even better, we're down when compared to New Hampshire and Maine at the same time. So our travel guidance is having an impact, and we're going to work through the next couple of weeks and months to make sure we have better compliance and more compliance. And as the governor says, everything's on the table, and we're trying to figure out the best way to ensure compliance without alienating Vermonters.
Well, speaking of alienating and trying to also allow businesses to have enough revenue to be able to stay open and just survive this, Eric tweets, does Vermont plan to issue new guidance or requirements to lodging establishments, including Airbnbs, regarding out-of-state visitors? Also, could you ask Deputy Secretary Brady how Commerce handles tension between its normal role of promoting tourism and now having to discourage travel?
Well, that last question's the hard one. Right. I'll tell you, it's a very strange position to be in. And we do it this way by saying we're promoting the safe reopening of the economy, because to do so any other ways will decimate our economy for years to come. So if we do this right, there's been research published out there that shows if you do it right now, you catch up faster. And so let's do it right now. And that's where everybody at the Agency of Commerce's head is right now. It feels contradictory to say you can't do this, you have to do it this way. But we know when we're on the other side of this, because we did it right now, we will bounce back faster than other states. On the, you know, just talking about travel in general and new guidelines, our lodging properties, including Airbnbs and short-term rentals, they have to ask all of their customers, require all their customers to certify that they comply with the travel guidance. The governor referenced it today. We're going to be stepping up those compliance checks. That includes with Airbnb. It's harder because they're not these licensed organizations. But we have this thing called the internet. And it turns out all those short-term rentals are listed on the internet. So it shouldn't be that difficult to find them.
Yeah, I hear you on that. Lots of questions about this new travel map issue and questions that I think Vermonters will just get some, will feel reassured if they can just have answered. So let's go to Richard in West Fairley. Hi, Richard. You also have a question.
Yes. Thank you, Jane, for taking my call. I have two quick questions. One, can I still go to my doctor's appointments in the Upper Valley from Vermont to New Hampshire?
And Tracy Dolan, is the answer to that yes?
Yes, you can still go to health appointments. Those are essential.
Richard, you had a second question?
Yeah, the second one is, what's going to happen to all these out-of-staters that have bought hunting licenses and spending hundreds and even thousands of dollars to come up here? Opening season for rifle is on Saturday. What happens to those folks?
Richard, thanks for the call. Deputy Secretary Brady, I know you're not Fish and Wildlife, but could you answer that?
Yeah. If they're not able to quarantine before coming, they shouldn't be coming. And I know the Fish and Wildlife Department is putting out some information about that, if they haven't already done so, just to make sure that these folks know that.
Will they be getting a refund on their hunting and fishing license if they cannot travel to Vermont during the hunting season that they are hoping to be here for?
I'm not sure of that, but I can say that, you know, we've got a long season, or a longer season than just the immediate in front of us. And
if you're coming for rifle season, you've got 14 days. You know, that's it. There's not a long season. I mean, I suppose you could switch over to late archery. But, you know, if you've been planning all year to come for deer rifle season, you know, that's not something that you can just do at another time when you feel like it in December.
Sure. We'll get back to the show on that. But I would say if you are somebody who can't come for a rifle season due to the restrictions, you should call the Fish and Wildlife Department and discuss it with them.
Just quickly on hunting, Dan says, can someone come across the border to hunt alone for the day if they're not staying in the state? And the other way around, can someone hunt another state for the day, making no stops and hunting alone and coming home after? This was kind of addressed in the press briefing, but Deputy Secretary Brady, it sounds like that is not allowed. Hunting not considered an essential activity. So even if you think you can stay by yourself, be alone, that's not something that would be considered allowed under the new guidelines.
That's correct. You can't slip in just for the day, even if you say you're not going to have contact with other people. There are too many risks associated with that. Stopping for gas, checking your deer in, you'd be putting people at risk, in different places, putting yourself at risk. So whether you have a hunting camp away or a hunting camp here, or you're just going on foot for the day, you need to comply with the quarantine guidance if you're coming to Vermont to hunt or going out of state to hunt.
I hadn't thought about the reporting station. Yeah, of course, everybody's hoping to have to go to a reporting station. Right. Let's go to Rachel, who's calling in from Plainfield. Hi, Rachel.
Hello. I have a question about quarantining. If somebody has come in from out of state, been tested, but is waiting for the period to end, and we need to drop off food or talk to them at a distance, like 12 feet with masks, is that okay?
So your friend is in Vermont and is quarantining, and you want to drop off food but and converse from a safe distance.
Yes.
Tracy Dolan, that would be okay, right?
Yeah, I would encourage dropping off food if they're quarantining. Probably a longer discussion could happen over the phone, but certainly you can bring them what they need and check in on them.
Or maybe talk through a closed window.
Yeah, talk through a closed window. The space makes sense, and of course, mask up.
Mandy is with us from Facetown. Hi, Mandy. Go right ahead.
Thank you for taking my call. My question is about my daughter returning to Vermont for Thanksgiving. She attends a small college in New York, and she's tested there every 2 weeks. They have zero cases on campus and are very strict about masks and distancing and protocols on campus, and all of her classes are online. She was hoping to quarantine on campus for 7 days, get tested and get her result, and then be picked up and returned to Vermont by car. I would pick her up, and my only stop outside of Vermont would be on her campus to load her up and come home. Would we then be required to quarantine when we arrive in Vermont?
Ted Brady, I'm going to toss this one to you because you were talking a little bit about the carve-out for people who do need to pick up their college students. Does this apply?
Right. If they're driving straight through, picking up, and having no contact with anybody while they're picking their student up, curbside pickup, that should work, especially if they have that quarantining ahead of time. That's even better because when they show back up in Vermont, the quarantine's already done.
Tracy Dolan, there have been questions about which tests are allowed when it comes to the question of that testing beforehand to get out of the 14-day requirement. And my understanding was that tests being conducted on college campuses, unless that those aren't always considered valid for this purpose.
If you get a negative test and come in, I don't think that we have said that we won't allow some tests. I'll have to get back to you on that. But if you have a negative test and you quarantine and then you come directly, as far as I know, we will accept that.
Okay. So, Mandy, it sounds like you're okay to pick up your daughter and bring her back. So good luck with that. Let's go to Barbara in East Randolph. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go right ahead.
Okay. I have to travel to Logan Airport in Boston to return one of my workers, or not to return, but to get him on a plane to return. And I want to know if when I come back, do I have to quarantine? And yes, I have to get out of the car.
Okay, so Deputy Secretary Brady, what do you think?
Yeah, ultimately, if it's part of your job to return somebody to the airport, you know, much like if you were a taxi driver or a bus driver having to do that, if that's part of your job, that'd be considered essential work. I would just put a big caveat that there might be another way to do that would be safer for everybody, and that's what we'd prefer. And a good rule of thumb in all of our guidance is just because you can doesn't mean you should. So if there's another way to do this, please find it. But if not, our existing essential work guidance would allow you to do that without quarantine.
And let's go to Onita in Norwich. Hi, Onita. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling because Hanover and Norwich are very entwined. And what happens if you live in Norwich? You know, obviously people work back and forth. People shop back and forth for food. And you have a child who's living on the other side of the border. Does that mean you can't see your child anymore?
Yeah. Tracy Dolan?
Is this a minor child and about parental visitation? If that's the case, of course, that's allowable. But if you're crossing the border for any reason and you're spending time that is not associated with essential travel, and then, you know, that becomes a challenge. So you would need to figure something else out. I can't get very creative right now, but I'll punt over to Ted unless he's got a different take on this.
Yeah, it's difficult, Deputy Secretary Brady, when it comes to somebody who's, you know, you can practically see across the river and see them, might feel different than if you have family members who you now know you can't visit in Maine or Connecticut or something like that.
Oh, yeah, it's devastating. We understand that, and it's an enormous sacrifice for public health here. But it is correct. Tracy's spot on. Unfortunately, we're in a position where the two states don't have the same rules. And, you know, live free or die versus freedom and unity. In this case, I go with freedom and unity.
I've told my parents, you know, I'd rather not see you this Christmas and be able to see you 10 or 12 years from now still at Christmases than see you this Christmas and kill you, which, you know, is a joke but not a joke at the same time. And it's, you know, so devastating to all of us, but that's sort of where we stand right now. I want
to
move on.
Yeah,
go ahead, Tracy Dolan.
Can I just love to remind people, because I know we're getting into the regulations and it feels so difficult and restrictive. However, just a reminder, our cases are going up. I think yesterday we had 46 cases that we announced today. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got hospitalizations going up. This is real. The virus hasn't become less dangerous. We have been able to manage it better and keep it away from some of our most vulnerable. But as it comes into our community, we will see it touching those more vulnerable, some of the elderly. So this is really about protecting our folks. And then, of course, also related to opening up our economy. And it's really hanging on now to these important guidelines over the next few months while we wait for a vaccine.
So we're going to talk a little bit just briefly about the school-based testing that was announced today for faculty and staff. But I saw a call come in from Dorothy in South Burlington who wants to know if she can get a medical test at Dartmouth-Hitchcock in December, which is, of course, across the border in New Hampshire. And just want to reiterate, Dorothy, because we don't have time for your call, that is allowed. Medical care is considered essential travel, so you should be fine to get your test at Dartmouth-Hitchcock, assuming that you can follow all of that medical center's protocols for COVID pre-screening. So we do have a few minutes now to talk about what was announced today, which is that the state is going to start surveillance testing throughout Vermont schools. So all teachers and staff will be tested on a rotating basis. And this is going to start before Thanksgiving, but Health Commissioner Dr. Mark Levine said today it's anticipated to be the strategy for the foreseeable future. So the state will be testing one quarter of all of the schools each week, and still some details to work out, but it sounds like that will be sort of randomly scattered throughout the state so it can be true surveillance testing. So no school will go more than a month without having staff and teachers tested. Deputy Commissioner Dolan, Dr. Levine did clarify that that is not a requirement. Teachers will not lose their job if they do not assent to being tested. But the idea is to be able to what? Get a sense of what the testing, what the cases look like in school communities, because you're not testing students, just adults.
That's right. It is a voluntary program. We anticipate, because a lot of teachers have been interested, that we will get a lot of uptake. I mean, primarily it's, you know, about protecting teachers and protecting that community. Teachers are a good surveillance population. When Dr. Burks visited, she recommended that we look into more surveillance populations for testing. We already do some surveillance testing among some staff in organizations. And so we thought this is a good one. Teachers are obviously in touch with a great number of students. And so it gives us a snapshot as to what's going on and hopefully helps us find more cases as we see our positivity rate slightly rise. It's still not high, but this allows us another way to find cases early and continue to work on containment.
So Karen in Waterbury says, please ask about testing teachers and staff at our schools on a weekly basis. We're told not to meet in groups over 10, yet here we are in a building with over 400 children and adults, and no tracking and testing is happening. Tracking and testing will be happening in the future, though. But Ro Jenny on Twitter also says, how can you justify keeping kids and teachers in classrooms with well more than 10 people when outside of school it's deemed a huge health and spread risk? Deputy Commissioner Dolan? Yeah, go right ahead.
Sure, here's the difference. In schools, there are actually pretty strict guidelines. The mask wearing is strict. There are temperature checks. There are distancing rules. And actually, we have seen relatively little transmission within schools. We have been relatively successful. Where we are falling down is really this more informal situation of social gatherings, coming together in people's homes, 15, 20 people, small parties. That's where we're seeing the challenge, and that's why we're pushing. It's not that any group is high risk. The higher risk is really where we start getting more relaxed around each other. But in schools, schools have been really good about what we have been putting out there. Obviously, there is some transmission. We're seeing numbers go up in our state and around us. But schools, for the most part, have done a fantastic job. Students have really done a great job adjusting to this, and teachers as well. And I know it continues to be a challenge, but we're actually seeing relatively few cases in schools. We get a smattering, but we're not seeing big numbers in schools.
I want to try to squeeze in one more call here from Andrew in Jericho. Andrew, can you make it quick?
Yes. My children live in New Hampshire, and I'm supposed to have them every other weekend. And I was wondering, having not been able to hear the press conference earlier today in its entirety as I'm working, I wondered if there are, if there's allowances for, say, a court-ordered visitation for me to still get my children this weekend. My ex.
Yeah, Andrew, let me stop you there just so that we can get an answer from Ted Brady. You know, Andrew's got kids who live across the border. Can he travel to and fro with them, and can they travel to and fro?
Easy answer, yes. Parental visitation, and yep, it's okay.
And so, Andrew, the court orders would still stand. Andrew can also go pick up his children, it sounds like. That's allowed under the guidelines?
Yes. Again, if there's a way to reduce the risk, make sure people are masked. If there's a way to meet somewhere outdoors and do the trade-off, great. But otherwise, yes, there's an exemption for that essential travel.
And Jen in Bolton has a note saying, can you please ask Vermonters to stop wearing their masks just below their noses? I've seen this look on so many, 95% of them men, Jen writes, in the last several weeks. Come on, Vermont, we can do better. Tracy Dolan and Ted Brady, thanks very much to both of you for spending this hour with us, fielding so many questions. I have a feeling we'll have just as many next week, but I really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tracy Dolan is Deputy Commissioner for the Vermont Department of Health, and Ted Brady is Deputy Secretary for the Agency of Commerce and Community Development.